days to live. I got on death clock last week and typed in my information, my age, my health, and all of that, and I found out that I'm going to die on July the 13th, 2051, almost at the ripe old age of 99. Now, I hope I can still hunt and fish by, you know, when I'm getting close to that age. But that's it, you know, and that's kind of comical and funny. But the truth of the matter is that every person, if Jesus tarries, that's in this room, is going to die. Some will die sooner than others, but we're all going to die. It says in Psalms, in the book of Psalms, it tells us, chapter 90, verse 12, it says, "Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." You know, we need to learn to live our lives like we're dying. We need to learn to live our lives with the end in mind. Because when you live your life with the end in mind, it changes the way that you make decisions. It changes the way that you look at things. It changes the way that you look at people. It changes the principles that govern your life. Every one of us will die. It tells us in Hebrews that man is destined to die once, and after that, he'll face the judgment. Every one of us will stand before God, and every one of us will face the judgment. We will all die. Now, that sounds morbid, and this, you know, we're a life-giving church. You know, it's on the overhead thing here all the time. Believers, a life-giving church. We're about life. But the truth of the matter is that even in life, there is death. There's death. And it's going to happen to all of us. So, the way that we live our lives, I'm going to say something that may sound a little funny to you. The way we live our lives will determine the way we live eternity. Now, first of all, the choices that you make, choosing Jesus as Lord, determines which way you go, okay? But I'm talking about the quality of your eternity. Heaven is not everybody's the same. There's going to be people there who have great rewards, and they will be truly blessed, and everybody's going to be blessed that's there, but there's going to be people there who have tremendous reward. And then there's going to be Christians there who basically have lived them their lives, they're saved, but they really never do anything for Christ, they never witness, they never do anything for the kingdom. They'll be there, but when they stand before the bema judgment of God, where our works are judged, every one of their works will be judged and there'll be no reward. I don't know about you. Going to heaven is a cool thing. But I don't want to just waste a whole life that means nothing and that left nothing. Last week, we talked about the first phase of how would we live our lives differently if we had 30 days to live. And we talked about living life with passion and purpose. And we talked about several things. Let me go over those real quickly. I'll try not to belabor it because you can go online and listen to it free. But we talked about getting out of the someday syndrome. One of these days I'm going to read my Bible. Someday I'm going to read my Bible. Someday I'm going to give my heart to Jesus. Someday I'm going to take a college course and learn more about the Bible. Someday I'm going to learn how to witness. Someday I'm going to volunteer at the church. Someday I'm going to do something for God. And first thing you know, all of your Sundays are gone and you've wasted years of your life. And that's a sad, sad thing. You have one chance to live this life. You have one chance to live this life. And we need to learn to live it with passion and purpose. We need to discover again that time is our most valuable thing that we deal with. You can waste money and earn more money. But listen, you only have this day one time. Yesterday is past. Okay? That was your life. You have a life in the future. But today is your life. You are living life today. You'll live this day one time and it's gone. How are you spending it? How are you managing your time? It's important that we manage our time because it is the most valuable thing that we have. It just seemed like marked that just a year or two ago, I was 21. Then I know. I still look that way. You know. But I look up and I'm almost 58. 21, 58. What happened to 37 years? Time passes fast. It didn't seem like long ago that we had three little old boys that was running around our house. And all of a sudden I look up and they're married and they got wives and kids and all of that. And I'm thinking, what has happened? Where did everything go? What's going on? So time is our most valuable thing. We don't need to waste our time and our opportunities. The next thing we talked about is your most important connection. And that is your relationship with God. See, you're never going to get it right if you don't ever connect with God. Your whole life will be for naught. You will be born and die and never live. If you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, you'll be born and die and yet never really live. You will produce nothing of eternal value. We were not designed to just be mortal creatures. We were designed to have eternal impact in our lives. And we need to be doing that. Amen? Then we talked about taking care of yourself. You have a wonderful mind that God has given you. He didn't intend for you to burn your mind up with your brain cells up with drugs and all that kind of stuff. He didn't intend for you to do that. But you have a wonderful mind. Dr. Caroline Leaf tells us that we have enough memory power in our mind to last us for 3 million years. You have adequate memory. Don't ever say you don't have a mind because you got one. The problem is you've never done anything with it. You have not managed your mind. You have not put stuff in there. If you'll put it in, it'll come out. It'll come out. We've wasted our minds. We've got to take care of our minds. We've got to develop ourselves. We need to take care of our bodies. This body does not belong to you. It belongs to God. God loaned it to you to live in while you're here in the earth. You know what? If you don't take care of this, you'll go to heaven sooner than you should. That's just very possible. So we need to learn to take care of our bodies. Then we talked about last week, stepping out and taking risk. Too many people live safe lives. They have things in their heart to do, but they're afraid to step out and take any risk in life. Listen, life is risky. There's nothing safe about life. It is dangerous out there. And there are risks that will have to be taken. You say, well, I might fail. Well, join the failure club. Everybody has failed. But we need to be willing to take some risk. Now, I'm talking about in line with your purpose. Okay. Maybe you feel a call to do something for God. And you've never done anything with it. Because you're afraid. Sometimes you got to step out and take a risk. Maybe you hear about something and you think, man, I would love to do that. I would love to be involved in that kind of ministry. But you're afraid to step out and take risk. We've got to be willing to take risk. The next thing we talked about was thawing out your dreams. God places eternity in our hearts. God fills you with purpose. God fills you with dreams. And a lot of times, we allow the bumps of life to rob us of our dreams. And our dreams become frozen. They become frozen in our heart. And we need to just thaw out those dreams and begin to dream again. Because one of the ways that God fulfills us is through our dreams. You know, I see some things that God wants to do in the future. And I'm thinking, how will we ever get there as a church? But if I look back 10 years to where we've come from, I used to dream, and this was a sleep dream. I used to have this dream all the time that I would walk in and the house would be just full of people. Last week, the house was just full of people. I think we had 580 people here last week. Whoa. I don't think I've ever preached that many people at one time. But I dreamed about preaching to a full house. And that's back in the day when I was preaching at the old church that would seat about 100 and it was half full. But I had a dream in my heart about doing certain things. See, a lot of times God puts dreams in our heart that He wants to fulfill in us. But when we get frozen and paralyzed by fear, we shut down our dreams. Dare to dream again. Dare to dream again. See, if you're going to live life passionately and with purpose, you're going to have to live. Then the last one was live life full throttle. There's some things in life that just needs to be opened up. My four-wheeler needs to be opened up every now and then. Run full throttle. Why? Because it's healthy to do that. It's just healthy for it to run full throttle. It was not made to idle. You were not made to idle. You were made to run full throttle. So, learning to live life passionately and on purpose. Now, let's get into today's stuff. And we're going to talk today about loving completely. Loving completely. We were made for love. Love is our destiny. Our God is love. And we were made to love. I love the Corrie Ten Boom quote that says, "The measure of a life is not in its duration, but in its donation." The measure of a life is not in its duration, but in its donation. You can live a long, selfish life and a full, long life and be frustrated. I have known people who lived a short time, and yet they had more impact in their short life because of the donation of their life than the person who lived to be 100 years old and was self-centered. So we need some not only duration, we need donation. You were made for relationships. And that's what life is all about. Life is about relationships. Did you know heaven is going to be about relationships? The Bible is about relationships. Eternity is about relationships. We were created. When God looked at man before He created Eve, He said it's not good for man to be alone. So He created someone to have a relationship with. And so those things are so important. We were created for relationships. Who are we supposed to love? You're not supposed to love your stuff. I love my motorboat. I love my, you know, I love my four-wheeler. I love my deer rifle. I love my stuff. No, you can like that stuff, but listen, you were created for relationships. You were created to show and demonstrate the love of God. Amen. I'm preaching good, better than you're shouting today. Okay. When it's all said and done, relationships is the only thing that matters. You know what? When you're hurting, when you're sad, when you're crying, your deer rifle won't give you any comfort. Your four-wheeler won't put its arms around you and love you. It takes people to do that. And I know people who just live for their stuff. And that's such a shallow way to live. You were created to be in relationship. You know what? I don't know all of your names, but I have a relationship with everyone here of some kind, on some level. I have a responsibility in a relationship. You are responsible to have a relationship with people that you meet on some level. Some are close. Some are distant. Some are so far away, all you can do is pray. But you are to demonstrate the love of Christ everywhere that you go. Your relationships are so important. See, it's your investment in people that you care about that'll be the only legacy that will live beyond your life. It's the people that you care about. It's the investment in them. That will be your legacy. You will not be remembered for all the stuff that you had. You won't be. What you'll do is you'll pass that stuff on and somebody else will take that stuff and do something with it and sell it or spend the money or whatever. And they're not going to remember all of that. But the legacy that you leave are the principles of relationship that you enter into with other people. It's so important that we see that today. You're quieter than the first crowd. Are you soaking today? Are we soaking? Okay. Relationship starts with God. We're designed to be in... Let me get this right. That's vertical, isn't it? Okay. We're designed to be in a relationship with God vertical. And at the same time, with people horizontal. And I say this all the time, and I believe it. That if I have a problem here, it's because something's not right here. Okay? That I need to deal with some stuff here so that I can do this. Everything flows out of your relationship with God. If it produces anything of eternal value, it's going to flow out of your relationship with God. When you're disconnected with God, you produce nothing of eternal value. When you're connected with God, eternity should be the result. But you're sowing things into people that will produce in them something great. Okay. See, Jesus summed it up this way. He said there's two things that's important. The whole Bible. If you're going to understand the whole Bible. Listen, if we could really get these two things down, we'd have Christianity down. Love God with all your heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. If we'll perfect that, all of this other stuff will take care of itself. Everything else will take care of itself. We'll say, well, what does the Bible say about this? It'll take care of itself. Because relationships will be what's important. Amen. Now, truth is important, but we'll discover truth as we relate with God and other people. Okay. Here's something, and we know this. Relationships are messy. Have you noticed that? Relationships are messy. Sometimes marriage gets messy. Sometimes relationship with your kids gets messy. Have you noticed your kids don't always mind like you want them to? Sometimes things on the job, relationships on the job, they get strained and they get messy. People are messy. Look at your neighbor and say, you're messy. You're messy. But does that excuse us? He just run off, didn't he? He just ran out. That's all right. But we can't run from relationships because they're messy. Isn't that true? Because you are called to be in relationships. You just can't run because they're messy. Ephesians 4:3 says, make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. We're supposed to do our best to live at peace with all people. Well, if they would behave, I could. No, it didn't say for them to work on it. It said for you to work on it. Well, yeah, but if they would... No, it didn't say anything about them. It said about you. Why do we want to take the Word and apply it to our wife? Well, Lord, if she would straighten up, if she'd get a good attitude, then I. No, it didn't say. It said something to you. The Word speaks to you, doesn't it? Don't you love me? Okay. So what do we do? What if they don't cooperate? What, do you just break the relationship? Or what do? See, the Bible tells us in Romans 12:17, says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. If they're mean to me, I'm going to be mean to them. Yeah, that's real smart. Because you know what they'll do if you're mean to them? They'll be mean to you. Then you'll be mean to them. They'll be mean to you. And the first thing you know, you smack somebody. It don't get better that way. It tells us not to do that. Don't repay evil for evil. If it is possible, sometimes it's just not possible. Okay, I understand that. That's why the Bible said, if it's possible. As far as it depends on You. Not them. You. Live at peace with everyone. That means everybody, doesn't it? Now, there's some people that are so messy, they just, well, we'll get to that in a minute. So when we're talking about messiness of relationship, one of the things that we've got to deal with is a big word, and it's huge, and it's called forgiveness. Forgiveness. Everybody say forgiveness. We do not like this word. Okay? We don't like it unless we're needing it from God. Okay? We're not liking it unless we're needing it from somebody else. We don't like to give it always. But that's what we're going to talk about, forgiveness. Now it says in Matthew 5:23, therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, not you having something against your brother, but your brother having something against you, leave your gift in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, and then come offer your gift. It says for you to initiate forgiveness. To you to initiate reconciliation. See, it's been said, and I love this quote. It says, he who cannot forgive destroys the bridge over which he himself must cross. He who cannot forgive destroys the bridge over which he himself must cross. See, we want God to forgive us. If we want God to forgive us, then we have to be willing to forgive others. Well, God, you just don't understand what they did to me. That's not what it said. There's not any ifs, ands, buts, ors, or nors about it. It says forgive. Forgive. We don't like that, do we? Martin Luther King said, he who is devoid of the power to forgive is devoid of the power to love. You cannot love if you cannot forgive. See, here's what happens. Forgiveness sets the prisoner free, but the prisoner is you. See, here's the situation you get into. If I do not forgive, I put myself in a position that God cannot forgive me. I have to forgive so that I can be set free from my debt. This is tough stuff, but this is the way that it works. Okay. So we have to choose some things here. Let's talk a little bit about overcoming the obstacles to unity. You know, it tells us in the Bible that we're supposed to be in unity with one another. Did you know church people can fight like nobody else? You think Democrats and Republicans fight? Church people fight worse than anybody I know. You can have more strife in church that you can shake a stick at. No wonder heathens don't want to give their heart to Jesus. They look at the way Christians, you know, the Baptists are criticizing the Methodists, and the Methodists are criticizing the Pentecostals, and everybody's criticizing the Catholics. You know, and they're just, everybody's criticizing everybody. And people look at that and say, man, if that's Christianity, I don't want it. Don't read church history if you're searching for God, because it will discourage you big time. It's terrible. So how do we overcome the obstacles to unity? We have to understand what these obstacles are. And here's a big one. Number one is misunderstanding. It's amazing how many conflicts could be avoided if people would communicate. Now, my wife has supernatural ability. She does. She can read my mind, tell me what I'm thinking, and what I meant by it. Does any of your wives have that ability? Yeah. Oh. Sometimes we hear people say something, but we misunderstand what they mean, because we read into it something, maybe from the past, or maybe we just read stuff into it, and we just misunderstand each other. We do that in relationship. Not just marriage. You do it with your kids. You do it on the job. You do it in church. It's just people are messy. And sometimes we just misunderstand. Then a second obstacle to unity is the me first. It's all about me. What I want. What I want. Selfishness. People can be so selfish in their relationships. And it is an obstacle to unity. I won't dwell on that one much. And the third one is mistakes. Sometimes people just mess up. You know why? Because we're goof-ups. When Adam sinned, sin became our nature. We fell. And even after we got redeemed, we can still choose to make the wrong choices. Sometimes I wonder why God gave us a free will. I do. I just wonder, God, why didn't you just choose for us? Well, there's reasons. But sometimes we just make the wrong choices. We mess up. We make mistakes. And did you get it right, brother? Okay. I'm so glad. He prayed through. But we're not willing to forgive mistakes. There are obstacles to unity sometimes. See, we got to choose to accept people where they are, and if we can help them, we must. Not everybody that you're going to be in a relationship with, I'm not talking about marriage or dating, well, that too, are going to be perfect people. We're messy. But if you work with somebody, you need to try to get along with them. In fact, they may be there so that you can reach out to them. They may be there messy and God moved them here over here so that you could minister to them and you could help them work through their messiness. There's a lot of reasons that we're messy. And it's just too many to go into. Okay, let's talk a little bit about resolving conflicts. Learning to fight fair. Now, the boxing ring is a good analogy of this. How many of you remember, does anybody remember Muhammad Ali? I'm not talking about know who he was. Does anybody remember when he fought? Gosh, I did. I remember when he fought Joe Frazier. The Thriller in Manila. And the Gorilla. I remember all of that. But what was his famous boxing trick? It's called rope-a-dope. He would get up against the ropes and he'd put his hands up there, big long arms. He would just let that other person just wail against him until he wore himself out, and then he beat him. A lot of times that's the way we fight in our relationships. We refuse to fight. We get up against the ropes and we just wear them down. And then we win. That's one style of fighting. That's not very healthy to fight that way. Sometimes, many times, interchange needs to take place so that you can resolve issues. But if you rope-a-dope, that don't happen. I'm a rope-a-doper. I know when Kathy's upset at me, and she's wanting to fight, I know I cannot win. If I win, I lose. And if I lose, I lose. So what do? Rope-a-dope. Okay. I understand. That's my first tendency, to be a rope-a-doper. The next kind of fighter is a knockout puncher. He don't mess around. He goes for the jugular. He bam! Fight's over. I win. That doesn't resolve conflicts either. That's bad. And then we have the person who takes the fall. They get in there and they spar a little bit and then they go, whoop, I lose, you win. But that doesn't resolve the conflict, does it? They become the martyr. They become the one that they just give in and cave in. But that doesn't solve the conflict. That doesn't solve the problem. And then we have the 1-2 puncher. He gives punches and he takes punches. He gives punches and he takes punches. That's a little bit better because there's interchange. But that's not the best way. The best kind of fighter is a sparring partner. Now, what does a sparring partner do? That is somebody who helps you get better. If you're the fighter training for a fight, you have a sparring partner, and what he does, he gets in there and he works with you, and he helps you get better. So when we are in relationship squabbles and conflicts, what we should be trying to do is not win the fight. We ought to be able to help our relationship get better. We should be the sparring partner. You may have to go through some exchanges and stuff, but your goal should be a resolution to the problem. Now, let's talk about difficult people. Does anybody know any difficult people? Don't look at your spouse. Difficult people. You know some? Okay. I do too. People who just rub you the wrong way. They're like sandpaper. You see them coming and you go, ew. And you want to run. Have you ever been around people like that? Now, there's nobody in this room like that. But you know, there's some people you just dread seeing them come. Well, you got to remember something about people. There's usually a reason that they are the way they are. You don't know what they've been through. You don't know where they've been. You don't know what's hurt them. You don't know what they love. You don't know what they've lost. And many times, rather than trying to resolve situations, we try to run from situations. But when we remember that God has us here for a purpose, and that purpose is relationships, and you're responsible for relationships of people that you come in contact with. So you can't really avoid those people on the job. And those, listen, sometimes those people who are irritating, if you'll do it right, they'll help you grow. Because a lot of times what you begin to see is something in yourself that you need to change about you. And I've seen that happen a few times. And I see somebody come and say, oh, they're just going to take up my time. They're going to do this. They're going to nag. They're going to whatever. So let's talk a little bit about these kind of people. The first one is the perfectionist. Have you ever been around a perfectionist? Do we have any perfection? Don't raise your hand. Do we have any perfectionists in the house? And if you're in a relationship with a perfectionist, the problem is you never measure up. You never do good enough. Wow. That's hard. And these people tend to rub you the wrong way. Then you've got these pushy types. They're the forceful ones. They're going to have their way or you know, come hell or high water. They're going to have their way. Then we've got people who are always putting other people down. Don't you love those kind of people? You wonder when they're talking to you and they're putting somebody down, when they're talking about somebody else, are they putting me down? So they're always putting somebody down. They're always trying to make people look bad. And I think a lot of times these people just have an insecurity issue. They think if they make somebody else look bad, then they'll look better. Then we have needy people, extra needy. They're real clingy. They want to dominate your time. They want your attention all the time. Well, these people got problems. Relationships are messy. And we have a responsibility in some ways to relate to these people. If you push them away, guess what? You compound the problem. God may be using you to help that person. Then there's angry people. They're always just blowing up. They're mad. Get up mad. Anybody says anything to them, they're mad. They're just row, mad. Say row, mad. Then we got gripers. Nothing is ever good enough. It's gripe, 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 gripe. Gripe, 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 gripe. Then you have wishy-washy people. What's wishy-washy? They're always changing their mind. They never make a decision. They go this way and this way, this way and this way. And they just drive you up the wall. Make a decision. Well, are we supposed to cut those people off from relationship because they bother us? No. We have to learn to relate to those people because, listen, they will help you grow. They will help you become a better person. And who knows, maybe you can help them. Okay, let's talk about learning to live the life of gratitude. This is huge. If you don't do this, you'll never really learn the love life. We get so busy and so caught up in our life, in our ruts, that we forget to say thank you. We forget to thank God for our blessings. We forget to thank our loved ones for the things that they do for us. We forget to thank our co-workers for the kindness that they do in our lives. And we just can become so ungrateful. There's a story in Luke chapter 17 about the 10 lepers. 10 lepers came to Jesus one time, and Jesus ministered to them, and he says, "Go show yourself to the priest." Now, when a leper thought he was cleansed, what he had to do, he had to go show himself to the priest, and the priest tested him to see if he was cleansed. So they weren't cleansed yet, but Jesus, as an act of faith, told them to go show themselves to the high priest. As they were going, they were cleansed. Can you imagine? I mean, leprosy is a horrible disease. I mean, fingers rot off, ears rot off. I mean, appendages, you know, just decay and rot off and are smelly. And isn't that a good subject before lunch? But it's a terrible disease. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them turns around, comes back to Jesus, falls down, and worships and says, "Thank you." The other 9 went on. Jesus said, "Were there not 10? Who are the other 9? What was their problem?" They did not express gratitude. And the amazing thing, if you'll read it in the King James Bible, the amazing thing that it says at the end, when Jesus addressed that Samaritan who was cleansed, he says, "Go your way, for you are made whole." Now, the other guys were cleansed, but he was made whole. You know why he was made whole? Because he returned to give thanks. So we get a lot of people who get cleansed in their lives, but they don't learn to live the life of gratitude. It's you begin to discover the love life when you begin to become a person of gratitude. Can you say amen?